This is Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, it's time for Tuesday's market roundup here on Classic Business, Classic 1027. And joining me now for the big stories of the day is Petri Reerlinghuis from Herenia Capital. Petri, how's it going?
Good, thanks. And you, Kirby? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Let's get your quick recap on the market. What did you think of the trading today?
Tale of two halves, really. We saw a significantly stronger rand coming into this morning, so we saw strong performances really coming from the likes of the banks and the retailers, as one would expect on the back of the stronger rand, and of course weaker dual-listed rand hedges and commodities. So I suppose that's not necessarily too much out of what the context was. But if you look at the way the index traded, I mean, we started off slightly positive when the futures opened at 8:30. Then we traded almost 500 points down, and we ended day up almost 300 points. So it was quite volatile for the most part. And again, this is, I think, is largely due to low volumes being traded through the market, 16.8 billion rand. That's not exactly fireworks. But overall, a good day for emerging markets in general. We do see a lot of the emerging market currencies fighting back versus the dollar. We see a potential end to this trade war between the US and China. So that is all sort of taking pressure off of, putting some pressure on the dollar or relieving the rally that the dollar's been seeing and taking the pressure off emerging markets, which leads to some inflows and some buying in the local stocks, which is good to see. I hope that this is potentially the end of the pressure that we've been seeing on the banks and the retailers in the last couple of weeks.
I suppose memorable today is the darling of the market, or one of the darlings, shall I rather say, is Dis-Chem, which lost 3.26% of its value. It's now kind of back at levels that we saw late 2017 for a stock like this.
Yeah, I think, it did trade all the way up to, 192? Now I'm looking at the...
different price. This one's a different one.
The wrong stock. I think that, Dis-Chem has had a couple of problems where they listed and they're not necessarily, producing the type of returns that the market had been expected. Now, it's sort of traded... down 3.2% today. It's down 28.50 rand. I mean, if you look at the way that the chart looks at the moment, it doesn't look really very, very good. So I think the market is kind of looking at it and saying, at IPO, we had these huge expectations in the beginning. The stock traded up on really big expectations and looking forward to great earnings. And it seems that, it's a tougher environment than what investors expected in the share coming under a bit of pressure. And it's interesting because, I mean, how do you classify this? Is it a pharmaceutical company compared to something like Aspen? Aspen had a great day, 4.6% up, but also, trading at 263 rand versus the 385 rand it was 12 months ago. So the pharmaceutical space is relatively under pressure. So Dis-Chem is almost a mix between a retailer and a pharmaceutical. So an interesting sort of kettle of fish to try and unpack there.
Talking about maybe moving on, shall I rather say, to asset managers. I see Coronation was out with their half year results this morning. I see assets under management there declined 4.2% over the period. Your take on the results?
Well, not a bad set of results, I don't think. I mean, we saw that their profit is up something like 1.2% in the face of lower assets under management. So, what this is almost telling me is that they've actually had inflows coming into their funds. However, their AUM number, or assets under management number, is a derivative of what the market is doing, because obviously they're stock investors or equity investors. So as the market comes down, so does their assets under management. Now, operating cost also slightly higher, but nothing alarming, I don't think. I just think that their performance in terms of assets under management or their assets under management shrinkage at this stage is because the market's down from where it was a couple of months ago. So it's a derivative of market performance, overall market performance. So the share only down some 76 basis points on the day. So it doesn't feel like the market was too terribly disappointed by the results either. If the market was unhappy with it, they would have been smashed down. Now, if you look at the last 2 months that Coronation has been trading. It's down from 85 Rand to where it closed today at 66.80. So I think, you know, if there was, you know, the market at this point, it's always forward looking. So it had sort of expected for the earnings or for the assets under management to come down and thus the earnings to be affected negatively because of the way that the market has been performing. So I think that, you know, largely it's been priced in, and the fact that we actually saw profits increase in the face of lower AUM is a positive sign.
Yeah. Going overseas, I mean, Tesla, I see they continue to admit with issues around the Model 3. This time around, it is about braking issues. I know that in the past, you know, issues were around the design of the car. It was also around kind of production and trying to get the production numbers up. Tesla, I mean, is certainly a company that is breaking new ground as far as electric vehicles are concerned. But the jury's out if this business is actually going to make it long term. Is that correct?
Well, I'm a huge Tesla bull, but that's because I have the dream. You know, whether or not the numbers make sense is a different story. But the problem is that they got a few negative reviews in some car magazine, or in a car magazine over the weekend, where they tested a few Model 3 Teslas, and they basically came down to the fact that the braking distance that the Tesla Model 3 has, which is, you know, if you're going 120 kilometers an hour and you hit the brakes, how much distance does the car cover before it comes to a stop? And that was worse than like a pickup truck or what we know as a bucky. So it's bad, essentially. So Elon Musk came out on Twitter and said that no, it's because they tested an older Model 3. There's been a newer version. They bought a second-hand one. This might have identified an issue with it. And if it is a problem that we can just update, we'll do it at our expense. It's a few software changes that we have to make. We can update all the cars. It's not a problem. We will not rest until the Model 3 has a shorter braking distance than any other car in its class. So we'll see what that does. The problem is, though, because Tesla is still such a new car brand, and it, as you say, it is a sort of a groundbreaking car brand. It's the first all-electric car brand in the world, right? So it has a lot to prove. And these types of things, you know, it's not really going to put me off from buying a Tesla. You can't get them here, unfortunately. But, you know, the casual buyer, the person who has to compare that to their other options, might go, well, it's not the safest because it doesn't necessarily stop as quick as you'd need it to. And I'll be honest with you, I was in a situation, was it earlier this morning, actually driving in a VW. And when you need that thing to stop, it stops, which is fantastic, you know. So I think it is a bad sign, but, you know, like any other car manufacturer, they have safety issues from time to time, and they fix them and they carry on. So I don't necessarily think it's the worst thing. I think the major problem now is whether or not Tesla is going to be able to survive. There's a lot of questions around its liquidity and its balance sheet and its ability to make money. But, you know, I think it's been through worse in the past. I think the leadership, or Elon Musk in particular, is a really creative thinker and has the ability to sell his dream better than most people. And if it means that they have to do further capital raises, I think he'll find people to continue to fund the business.
Leaders on how we produce, or shall I rather say, consume content, Netflix have indicated that they're going to be looking at signing, and as a matter of fact, they've already done so, signed up the Obamas for a diverse mix of content, including a potential for scripted series, unscripted series, docuseries, and documentaries and features that'll be available from 2019 onwards. I'm certain this is something that that people would want to see.
Well, maybe. I'm not too interested, I'll be honest. But maybe I should be. I don't know. But yeah, interesting move. I think this is something that Obama, or ex-President Barack Obama, had said prior to leaving the White House that he was interested in going into digital media. So it's the first ever deal, I think, that an ex-president has made with a production company, or he started his own production company, but, you know, the first ever sort of like, what is it going to be, a reality show? I'm not really sure.
Well, I suppose the interesting thing is, if one looks at the fight for content, you look at the position that a Disney is taking in the fight for content relative to a Fox, say, for instance, and various other content providers, and you look at the position of how content providers and content originators are trying to corner that market. Netflix is, it must be the clear winner in that space. And, you know, it just shows you how they just continue to, you know, how they continue to stay relevant in this space.
Yeah. And, you know, they're also the thought leader because, I mean, they brought streaming, you know, the Netflix, you can attribute to what is the end of, sequential television, where you have to watch a show at 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock the next one comes on. You can just watch whatever you want, whenever you want. And if you give people the content that they want, and you give it to them on demand, then you have a recipe for success, right? And I think that if people, because from what I read about what the Obamas want to achieve, is they want to focus on issues that they dealt with during Obama's presidency, things of equality, things of like an ethical framework that he believes is necessary. So it's really sort of a how can you say it? It's not necessarily philanthropic, but it's almost like he wants to continue to influence the world in a way that he thinks is positively that he was attempting to do, you know, while he was president. So he wants to sort of carry on the work that he was doing on a platform that allows him to speak to as many people as possible. They've got, 170 odd million subscribers on Netflix. So it's an interesting point you make that, you know, the battle for content is something that Netflix is potentially winning because, you know, why would you get cable TV or, and I'm sorry to take a shot at DSTV, but why should I get DSTV at R1,000 a month when for $15 I can get Netflix?
Yeah, I suppose that's one thing that is really that bothers MultiChoice, and I suppose any other cable provider globally is not only subscriptions that keep the content going, but you know the kind of virtuous cycle between the two. We've almost got just about another minute and a half left, Pietri. I mean, again, just talking about content, I see that Sony now will control 90% of EMI. This is now obviously in the music business. They paid an extra $2.3 billion for EMI. Now, EMI obviously is a very large music publisher globally. We're talking about legends such as Frank Sinatra, David Bowie, Pharrell Williams, you know, to mention some people that are producing songs today. Your take on this?
Well, it makes them the biggest music publisher in the world, doesn't it? I mean, they already have a stake. They're going to buy another 40% now, which takes them up to, another 50%, I think, which takes them up to 90% ownership in EMI. It's an interesting move, and I think that maybe it speaks to the same point that you were making earlier, as where those who control the content are the ones who are going to be earning the income in the future. It's not necessarily as important, having the market dominance in terms of infrastructure, because the infrastructure, largely today, the delivery system is the internet. So, I mean, if you look at Apple Music and the Beats deal, where they bought out Dr. Dre's business Beats for $1 billion, I think that deal was. That was huge, because now you can listen to any of those music channels live streaming via Apple Music. If Sony's doing something similar with EMI, you know, we might see a fairly large revenue increase coming into the Sony Corporation.
Well, from the makers of the Walkman to now the owners of EMI, you could listen to it by pushing a button, and now you'll be buying the content from them. Pietri Redlinghuis, thank you for joining us on the Market Roundup this evening.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.